You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Podcast, episode 53. I'm your host, Chris Webster, with my guest co-host today, Richie Cruz. On today's show, Richie and I talk about winter work and my new radio show. This is a replay of the You Call This Archaeology podcast. Find it live occasionally, sometimes on facebook.com/archpodnet. Let's dig a little deeper.
Oh.
Welcome to episode 51 of You Call This Archaeology. One more time. All right. Nothing but professionals here.
Yeah. Well, at least, you know, we look professional. I mean, this thing looks really cool. It's all lit up.
It is. I don't think you can see it in the feed, though.
You can't.
Yeah. It's blocked by computers. So. What do you got going on that you want to talk about? I've got a few things on my list for sure.
Oh, my God. Well, I want to say I was enjoying my unemployment, but I wasn't. You know, I mean, it was all right. But, I did have something else to talk about after saying I, you know, don't enjoy my unemployment. Basically, I was, like, very anxious about money, like a lot of people are, because I didn't save as much as I should have this field season. It was very disjointed.
Well, I'm looking at that watch over there.
I know. Well, it's only $25 a month.
Yeah. Nice. Well, it can be tough to save money. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you gotta pay the bills. You gotta live. You gotta do things, and trying to put away enough is never enough.
Especially when it's such a disjointed field season. This field season was very disjointed.
Yeah.
I think, not including next week when I head back out. You know, I guess I can't really count that since it's so close to the end of the year, may as well count as next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had about 3 months worth of work.
Okay.
Total? Maybe 3.5?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, no. 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's way less than your average field tech.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, your average field season is like, what, 9 months? 8 months?
Depends on where you're at, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like the fact that I had anything in savings was a miracle.
Right. You know, a lot of people end up working year-round, really. It just depends on where they're at and what they want to do and how much they want to move. When my wife and I were fully doing shovel bumming,
yeah,
you know, working all over the place, we would we never had a winter off. We
really?
Always had something to do. Yeah, whether it was work on some other project, go somewhere. Sometimes we got in a lab, you know, something like that. But we always had for 4 or 5 years that we were both doing shovel bumming together. We always had work. So,
oh well, I was busy trying to get myself a job. Sort of.
Yeah.
You know, for people who don't realize it, obviously there's the Happy Archaeology Funtime YouTube channel. And then there's the APN Facebook page or the APN page on it. And then I am busy right now working on the website.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't so busy working on it before because I thought I had more time.
Well, yeah. And you don't have more time because now you've got some work, right?
Yeah. Unexpectedly. Yeah.
Unexpectedly. I mean, you're one of those ones that's always kind of crushing it and hustling and trying to figure out what's my next thing. You're not like sitting back and, you know, and resting. Even though it's December, you're actively putting out resumes.
And more importantly, I'm also buying gear, like winter gear. Oh, that's one of the reasons, my God, my schedule next week's going to be so crazy. Like,
yeah.
I can't even, like, basically for people, I know it's going to be a little disjointed, but basically I head down to training Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then Friday, I drive back to Reno to pick up some gear I had dropped off to be repaired.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think I was going to need it. So I'm like, well, shit. You know, I've got time. There's no hurry.
Yeah.
But now, of course, it's a hurry, but I can't tell them that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Chuck says he's planning next summer's survey work on his forest. He must work for the U.S. Forest Service somewhere.
Neat.
So he's planning the survey work because they've always got something to survey on Forest Service land.
Oh yeah,
because it's so much. So you gotta plan out all that and how it's gonna go.
Yeah, I also gotta brush up my California archaeology again.
Yeah, so you're gonna be working out there. I got a question for you. You know, obviously we can't go into really a lot of detail on Richie's work because that's how CRM is. But one thing you did tell me was it's the kind of job where, you might be able to stay out there for a long time, and it's Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Let's play the long game on this. Let's say in 3-4 months, you're still working out there Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
How does you living in Reno get affected by that? Would you move?
No.
No? You'd stay in Reno?
I worked a whole field season in Minnesota. I didn't move out there.
But you knew that was temporary.
No, I knew it was the whole field season.
You knew it was the whole field season, but it sounds like this job that you've got now. I mean, what if you worked there for a couple of years?
Oh, that's not going to happen.
You don't think so?
No, I already got plans.
No. Okay. So you don't want to work there for a few years?
Well, not really.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you know, because like I remember last winter, because now I'm editing all the episodes, but basically I am still serious about getting in the marketing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So basically.
You have an exit strategy.
Yeah. So yeah. I figure I have a money savings goal and then I have a jobs goal. You know, obviously I'm not just going to quit and like float. I'm like, I want to make sure I have a, you know, a job, a solid job waiting for me here in Reno, which is actually getting easier. There's like, I've been seeing more jobs pop up on LinkedIn and Glassdoor.
Yeah.
In terms of marketing.
Yeah. Nice.
Which is the reason why, you know, I was talking about my website earlier.
Yep.
I forgot if I stopped, you know, completed the whole thought there, but basically I've just been like planning out the whole website. I was even like at a bar last night, like writing out pages. So I realized, man, I guess I do kind of need an about page.
You really do.
Yeah. And so I was writing that up and then I realized, man, I got to write all this stuff out because I got all the, I got the outline of what the pages are going to be and what's going to be on them.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. Like last night I was thinking about the possibilities of this website.
Yeah.
Cause, I want it to be like your one stop toolbox for like, if you're just getting into the job of archaeology, making it and you know, that way you can make an informed decision about whether this is a job for you. If you find out this is a job for you, you can brush up on your skills and find a job.
Nice.
Yeah. Not that I'm going to set up a, like a competing like, you know, arc field work or something. I'm actually just going to have pages talking about those, about the various job boards and links to them.
Well, that's good. You know, having an aggregator of different things.
Yeah.
Even then, I don't think, honestly, there can be too, archaeology hasn't reached the point where there could be too much competition. I mean, you could be doing training, you could be doing, you know, you could be listing jobs, you could be doing whatever you wanted. You could be doing podcasts about archaeology. I mean, it doesn't matter. We don't have enough in the field right now to really worry about competition stealing other people's thunder.
No.
You know, there's just not enough resources. So the more people, the more, I think it's difficult to increase SEO if you don't know what you're doing. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. So one of the ways we can increase SEO naturally is create more pages.
Yeah.
And that way when somebody searches, I want to be an archaeologist, you know, yours is one of the sites that'll pop up.
And I have more knowledge. Apparently I have more knowledge than either the job boards that, you know, we use. Because like literally you type in archaeology jobs into Google and neither Shovel Bums or archaeology fieldwork comes up.
Well, they're relying on a lot of
word of mouth.
Yeah.
Like the APN comes up more, you know, much sooner than that.
Yeah. Well, we focus on SEO because we're focused around the public and and getting people information. But chances are, if you get your first job in archaeology, by then you know about Shovel Bums and you know about archaeology fieldwork.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I want to comment. Lori Wallace Fisher joined us. She said she's using, I posed a question before the signal died and we had to restart it. That said, what are you doing for the winter? Are you couch surfing? Are you traveling? Are you working? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And she says she's working on the, she's using the time to see her children after being gone for 8 months. That's tough.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's tough when you're a parent. When you're a parent and or married or with somebody, it's difficult to see family while you're doing the field season.
Yeah.
So that's really hard.
Man, that's the reason why I already have an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also the reason why I want to get this website at least structured and running.
Right.
Because as far as I understand it, I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But as far as I understand it, everything's browser-based once you get all the plugins and WordPress installed. I might be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, I have access to a real computer this weekend. I got to do that. And then, you know, and then that effectively is my resume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my marketing resume. That's the way I look at it.
And I've created a page on, so for anybody with a website, I'd recommend you do this, but I've got a page on my DigTech website that is linked from the Archaeology Podcast Network and Team Black and Pro Podcast Now.
Yeah.
It's a media page. And it's just digtech.com/media.
Yeah.
And I set that up because of media contacts, just in case, and it has been used a few times when somebody wants to talk to me about something or whatever, they'll go there. And I've got basically my bio up there and I've got all the video and podcasts I've been in on other people's shows so they can see me on there and just any important links or anything like that, contact information, things like that. Not really a resume per se, but more of a media resume. But along the same lines, you can create something so you can easily tell somebody and you can put it on a business card. You'd be like, you know, your domain /.
Yeah.
CV.
Yeah.
/resume.
And a lot of these places that I've been looking at marketing jobs, they like have a spot specifically for your website.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. By the way, if you type in archaeology jobs into YouTube, that that podcast you did, Engineered Truth, comes up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
That and this English lady.
Yeah.
You know, because I originally had recorded an episode. It's on my phone. I was going to edit it. Mm-hmm. But then after watching her talking about archaeology jobs, I realized I need to restructure it slightly. Well, because I watched that, and then I watched someone, because I was originally looking about maybe doing Uber Eats or something during the winter.
Yeah.
And, like, I found a YouTube video that was very interesting. Things I wish I'd known before I joined Uber. And I was watching her video. I was thinking, man, that's actually really handy. Handier mm-hmm. than what I had recorded.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. Lori says she's also traveling with family. So that's cool, too.
Well, it's almost Christmas.
I know. And then Lauren Huddleston joined.
Yay.
Lauren is a longtime friend of ours, him and his wife, Jess. So I'm sure they're spending some time with family this week. They've got kids and enjoying that. So, hell, even I'm going out of town on 21st, heading out to Charlotte, North Carolina for a week.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's been in the news a lot lately because of that that Republican vote wrangling
thing.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. I heard about that. They're probably going to lose that GOP seat because of that.
No, they're not.
Well, that's the last report I saw this morning.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not. They're going to rig it again.
Nice.
I love the fact that they, I don't want to talk about politics necessarily since this is about archaeology.
Sure.
But I do want to say that the Republicans keep screaming, oh, they're liberal Democrats and the black people mm-hmm. and the brown people and blah, blah, blah. And of course, the only people who ever get are going to be convicted of it are Republican operatives.
Yeah. 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 Sounds like it.
Yay.
Nice. Nice. So have you had any bites on any of the other job-seeking stuff you've done? I mean, it is wintertime. It wouldn't surprise me if nobody's, like, saying, you know, eager to hire somebody.
Oh, the crazy part is that, you know, it's been, what, three? No, yeah, it's been 3 weeks
mm-hmm.
since the end of my last project. And the first week, I wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just needed to recharge. And then, the second week, I was basically setting up the job, you know, setting up the interviews and stuff for the job I just got.
Yeah.
And then this week was the first time I had sent out a regular person resume, a regular person job, like a marketing job. But, you know, I didn't get that one.
Yeah.
Which isn't a surprise. I mean, statistically, that's very difficult.
Yeah. And we're in a time when I feel like that market, well, I keep hearing from people here at the Reno Collective that there's a lot of people hiring for like social media and marketing because there's a lot more companies that are recognizing that need.
Yeah.
That being said, there's also a lot more people recognizing the fact that that's a place where they can get a job.
Yeah. Which is
So they're inundating the market with people that are qualified to do it.
Yes. Yeah, so I want to be like a step above before I really get back into it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I did discover something this week.
Mm.
I want to say something to the Android people, you know, one thing I really enjoy about Google Calendar is that they have a little widget, right? That shows like you can show like the week or the day or the month or mm-hmm. whatever. And on, you know, the widget, it displays a little emoji. So like, you know, like for my interviews, it just had a little briefcase.
Ah.
And then for my dentist appointment, I had a little doctor's mask.
Nice.
But the weird part is the fact that it doesn't do it on the desktop version.
Just on the mobile emoji? Mobile version?
Yeah. It's really handy though. It's like, man, that really should come to the desktop because it's really handy for understanding your week.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like really handy. Like, I mean, I'm not going to show the calendar to them.
Yeah, I won't even be able to see it. And it's your calendar.
That too. But see?
Yeah.
So like the little computer screens are where I'm supposed to be doing the APN social media stuff.
Nice.
You know, supposed to be.
Get on your job, Richie. Your volunteer job. Nobody's asking you to do or pay for it.
I know.
I just realized we're sitting on the wrong side of this graphic.
We are?
Yeah, because your image is on the left and mine is on the right. And we're sitting the opposite in the overlay.
Has it always been that way?
It has always been that way. I've just never noticed it.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Anyway, so, you know, moving along here, I think it's interesting starting to talk to people. I'm always interested every year on how people are handling the winter.
Yeah.
Because there's still a book I want to write if I ever have time to sit down and actually do it. It's the kind of thing where if I ever write a book again,
yeah,
it was too hard to actually write that while I was doing something else. My last book that I wrote, I was like, it was just, you know, once you actually approach somebody and let them know that you're writing a book, like a publisher, now the pressure's on. Yeah. Now they're like, okay, get it done. Right. Like we need this, we need this, we need this. And I feel like when I write it, not to get off on a tangent about just writing books, but I just want to sit down and have the time to write it. Like I want to take a month off and just do it. I've been thinking about it so much and I've got some stuff outlined that I just want to do it. But the book is, and this is why I'm thinking about Winter. Yeah. And I've talked about this before. You've probably talked to you about it, but it's basically a year long, like each book, you know, there'd be 12 chapters.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Starting in January.
Yeah.
And it's basically a year's worth of the career of an archaeologist. And it's an analog for your entire career, but it's like how to structure your year. And I still feel like we don't take enough advantage of the fact that we have a job that is seasonal. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we should see it as totally a bad thing. Now, obviously people like Lori have children, you know, you've got a lot of other expenses to worry about and it can be difficult to plan to have a lot of time off. Right.
Yeah.
But for people that are single, people that like yourself who are single and, you know, young, and I mean, you probably don't have a ton of bills. You don't have like a crazy car payment or a mortgage or anything like that.
Not yet.
You've got some things, but you don't have some of the big ticket items that you get, you know, at some point in your life. And, it's just like focusing on starting in like March when the field season is starting to kick in.
Yeah.
And saying, listen, this is my goal for next winter. Instead, people don't think of the winter until winter, until snow is on the ground. And they're like, now what am I going to do?
Well, some people, but
most people, I would say,
you
know, and they don't think about it. But I would like to see people in March say, listen, if I want to do this for December, January, and February, let's just say those are probably the worst months for field work.
Yeah.
December, January, and February. If I want to be gone, if I want to be, you know, traveling, if I want to be, you know, staying with family part of that or doing something, whatever I'm going to do. But then I also have my bills to pay.
Yeah.
What is that going to cost? And is it possible for me to save that much money over the next 9 months? Maybe. I think in most cases, the answer is probably yes. If you have a goal. When you tell somebody just to save money, that's such a nebulous thing. It's like, okay, save money for what? I mean, retirement, but that's so far off. Most people can't even conceive of it, right? So save money for what? But if I say, hey, I can live pretty comfortably on $10,000 for 4 months, you know, with a little bit left in reserve to get me into the start of the field season.
Well, especially if you have unemployment.
Especially if you have unemployment, you know, take a little bit money. If you need $10,000, you need to save at least $1,000 a month. And $10,000 is probably a high number for 3 months, let's be honest.
It is.
But I'm just using it because it's an easy number. But if you got to save $1,000 a month, now that's a lot of money to save every month. But when if you're working consistently and you're getting per diem, you're probably getting over $2,000 a month in per diem. There are ways that you can, if you really want to achieve those goals over the winter, there's sacrifices you can make during the field season. And I think it's worth it.
Yeah. You know, like people always complaining about their student loans.
Yeah.
But I ran into a dude who used his per diem over, I think it was just one field season.
Yeah.
He paid off his entire school loan or something.
Yeah.
Or, well, it can't be 1 year because he had $50,000 in debt.
Yeah.
So it must have been 2 years. But, you know.
It's possible.
Yeah. But, you know, he literally just took all his per diem and just put it into that.
Yep.
You know. And yet there are people like, oh my God, I have so many student loan debts and blah, blah, blah.
Well, now he's got that $400 or $500 a month he's not paying student loan payments on that he can do something else with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I am repackaging this and I'm going to drop it on the Archaeology Show podcast and I'm going to tell you why after this break. So let's take a break and we're actually going to take a live break again.
All right.
Because I want to talk about WildNote some more. WildNote is a constant sponsor of this network.
They are?
Yes. That's why I put WildNote ads on everything. So they're a sponsor of the network. I, full disclosure, work for WildNote now.
Yeah.
But we set up this relationship before I became a full-time employee with WildNote.
Yeah.
But I just want to promote, you know, what WildNote is doing right now. We've got some really cool things. We've made some slight changes to the platform. There's been some changes to the website. If you've looked at WildNote in the past, or even if you haven't, go check it out because this is one thing I love about this company is they're always doing structural changes. They're always doing improvements. They're always adding little things and saying, does this work? Does that work? And one of the things we did was, so just in case anybody's unfamiliar with it, which is probably most people right now, because it's still coming into the system.
Yeah.
When you first log in, you see basically a blank screen. And when you start adding projects, each project is represented by what's called a project card. And then you get into the project that way. Well, they've always wanted to do something with that project card and just haven't gotten around to it. And now there's a graph on there that basically shows you the past, the current week, and the 8 weeks before the current week, how many survey forms are submitted each week. And it's just kind of a little dashboard about what's being done week to week on your project.
Oh, what do you mean submitted? Like, so like it has like a, it has like a graph and it shows how many you have total and then how many of those have actually been turned in.
Well, when I say submitted, I mean submitted in the term of like computer language. So you start a new survey form and then hit save. That is submitted to the system. It now has a survey ID number. Right?
Yeah.
I'm actually not sure because this is pretty new and I haven't played with it.
Oh.
If you go and delete that survey form, does that reduce your number? Or is it just number ones you submitted? So if I want to inflate my numbers and just create 10 new California primary forms and then delete them all, does that 10 stay there in the graph? I actually don't know.
Well, because, you know, the way I would look at it is that, you know, I know this is supposed to be an ad for WildNote, but I just want to say that what would be handy is if, you know, it showed you how many forms were started. And then how many are currently like marked as done or like have all the required fields done.
And we're looking at stuff like that. We're looking at making the card. We'll probably want to close that door.
All right.
We're looking at wanting to make that card a little more dynamic, you know, and put a lot more information on there. Probably make the cards a lot bigger and put like more of a project dashboard kind of information on there. This is just a start. So... we'll end the ad for WildNote, but I want to say that if you are using WildNote or you go in and try the free 30-day trial, and I will tell you the trial is probably going to be changing come sometime in the new year.
Really?
We haven't. I'm not going to say anything because we haven't landed down on what the trial is going to mean.
Yeah.
But we're trying to figure out a way that's more effective for people in the trial status. And sometimes 30 days just isn't the right thing. Like they hear about WildNote. And within that 30 days, they don't have time to either try it out or something like that. And then their trial expires and then they go away and they do something else.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out other ways to have a trial and just figure out what that means. So I will say that right now. But anyway, check it out, wildnoteapp.com, and let me know how you saw it. Chris@wildnoteapp.com is what you can email me at.
Cool.
And we'll go from there. So.
Oh, man.
All right.
Now that the ad is done, can we talk about Collector?
Yes, let's talk about Collector.
Because, you know, I mean, obviously I have to get used to it, but I mean, so it's like Esri's program, right?
Yeah, so Richie's taken a job that we talked about earlier, and they're using Collector on there. It's ArcGIS Collector.
Oh.
And it's basically an Esri, and Esri is the JS program most people know. And Collector is an application that I've only used it very briefly, so I really don't know a lot about it. I know what it's capable of because I talked to a lot of people that use it.
Oh, let me look it up.
Yeah. Basically, it's a data collection application that's free from Esri because they know that really to use Collector, you need to upload all the data to Esri, so that's where they're making all their money. But I'm not even sure if you can really adequately use Collector for free without having Esri. I'm actually not sure about that at all. That being said... it's for, you can create different kinds of forms on there. So in that sense, it's similar to WildNote and other programs. You can collect data. You can collect spatial data from what I understand. You can do points, lines, and polylines.
Oh.
I believe. And then export those data to Esri and have shapefiles created out of it. And then your written data is joined in with your spatial data. But the problem with Collector is it really should be focused on as a spatial data collection program. Anything that's not strictly spatial data, like artifact descriptions, feature descriptions, site descriptions, environmental stuff, you can't do anything with it, right? You can't produce forms out of Collector. Now, if you're savvy enough, you can produce, say, California DPR forms and stuff like that. It's really difficult, but you can produce them based on the information that comes out of Collector, but it's a multi-step process that you have to put together yourself. They don't have something built in where you can put together basically a custom form on the backside.
Plus, it's probably just as complicated as any of their other programs with the DID.
Right. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, that's why with WildNote, we're doing that for you. You know, we have the California DPR forms, and they just happen. They just work. So,
kind of almost like Apple, the way Apple used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. So, yeah, that's Collector. Richie's got on the screen there. And
it doesn't show you a lot about what it does.
No, and that's another thing. The program is not very intuitive either. you know? But a lot of people use it because, like I said, they're getting a really good marketing because they're already using Esri. So the GIS department's like, hey, Esri sends us these emails about Collector all the time. Let's try it out. You know, and I have to applaud people for using Collector right off the bat because that tells me that they have an initiative to really see how they can be more efficient and sustainable and really be more more marketable and really honestly just better for the planet. So they can do those sorts of things and it's really awesome. I just think it's time, now that you've cut your teeth on Collector,
yeah,
now look at something that's a little more robust, a little more designed for archaeology and environmental work, biology, wetlands, stuff like that, and has some customization options as well. Collector, you can throw a ton of money at Esri and they're not going to build custom exports for you. It's just not their job. It's not what they're doing. And if they did have agency forms in there, they're probably not staying on top of it like we are. So, you know, we're paying attention to the changes that come down and we, you know, we're in communication with all those people. So
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's Collector. I think you're going to like it initially from the data inside.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the data outside. At your level, when you're a field technician in the field,
yeah.
Collector is not a bad application. You're collecting information on your phone, unless they're giving you a device. You're just using your phone, and
maybe.
It's nice. It's handy. It's seamless.
Yeah,
it's just on the management and export side, it's total and complete junk. It's inefficient.
Interesting. Yeah,
it's not something we should be using. So there's better options out there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I could sit down with a GIS specialist and like have them go through it with me.
Well, here's the problem with digital archaeology.
Yeah.
And companies and CRM firms and environmental firms is, and I'm going to make a lot of generalizations here, and please chime in if you don't think I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
But typically at a company, you'll find that your average archaeologist is not very tech savvy.
No.
They rely on specialists. They rely on other people to say, hey, come do this technology for me, you know, come bring your GPR and do your thing. I understand what I can get out of it, but I don't know how to do it. Right. Like that's their attitude. And, you know, I mean, it's not just a money thing either. Like a lot of archaeologists don't even have like a phone that was made in the last like 2 or 3 years. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just don't care about that kind of stuff. It's not like they don't want to, they just don't care. So the ones that do care about technology,
yeah,
are usually in the GIS department because it's already a highly technical field.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some deep knowledge of your computer, how to work it, maybe some scripting in Python and stuff like that to really understand how to fully use GIS.
Yeah.
And therefore, those are the people that are typically pushing the push to digital archaeology because they see this stuff coming through. So it's no surprise.
Yeah, but they're also the low man on the totem pole usually in the office.
Well, it just depends. It depends on the size of the office. The GIS department, the mapping department could be a big department.
Mm.
Or it could be a field tech that just learned how to do GIS and nobody else wants to do it. You know?
Either way.
Yeah. So either way, my point is it's usually somebody from the GIS department that is coming up with these solutions. And of course, they're going to use solutions that they're being pushed by their marketers and people that they work with. And that's why I'm not surprised that Collector is kind of the dominant application for collecting field data.
Well, it's like the principle of business. If you're the first person, if you're the first name they think of, then you've already won at least half the battle.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and this is why, you know, when you tell your company, like when I tell the people holding the purse strings at WildNote, you know, they're going to inevitably say, because they don't know anything about what we're doing, you know, why should you go to this conference? You know, why should you go to this conference here or that conference there? And I'm like, listen, even if we don't have an audience there right now, they need to see us.
Yeah.
They need to know we exist.
Yeah.
And we might not get any business at all from that conference right away. But in a year, when we're still around and they're like, holy crap, we need to go digital. And they see that pen or that, you know, thing they got from us at a conference, and we're like, oh, now it's time for me to check out this WildNote thing. You know, I mean, I've done that time and time again. Like a good example that I can think of is Direct AMS. You know, I've never used Direct AMS.
Those dudes.
Yeah. And Beta Analytic. Beta Analytic is another one. So if you think radiocarbon dating, you typically think Beta Analytic because Beta Analytic is at every freaking conference.
More importantly, they always give out lanyards.
They do. They give out good swag.
Yeah.
Well, now Direct AMS is a competitor for Beta Analytic, and they are going to every single conference.
Yeah, but where's their swag?
Well, they have swag.
They do.
They have keychains and they had coffee mugs. I've got one up in my office. Yeah. And they came on the scene. And now if I think, hey, I need to have some some stuff done, I know that there's a couple options out there and I can get some different prices. And I know one thing, Beta Analytic is a huge company, right? They're really big. They do a lot of business. And Direct AMS, while a competitor, is not quite as big, right? So my guess is if they want to win my business, Direct AMS is probably cheaper. You know, they're probably more affordable for me to go get a radiocarbon date than Beta Analytic, because Beta Analytic has a line out the door of people wanting samples, and they can probably charge whatever the heck they want to charge.
Oh, the most important part to me is, where is the Wild Note swag? Like, why don't I have a Wild Note lanyard?
Well, it's coming. It's coming. You'll get it soon enough.
Or, where's the Wild Note measuring tape?
You want a Wild Note t-shirt?
I already got one.
You have a Wild Note t-shirt?
Yeah.
Did I give you one of those?
No. Oh. What's her name? Gave it to me.
Nancy did?
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, when we were in...
In California.
Yeah, we were in San Diego.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that is some pretty good swag right there. Wild Note t-shirt. Come on. It's pretty good. Now, we're coming up with some other stuff. Don't worry about it. Yeah. And you will be the first to know. Trust me, Richie.
Oh, my God. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember this, but I remember when we were working for a company that went bust in this town down the street.
Yeah.
Remember they had that bowl full of like super old expired chapstick?
I do remember that. I think I still had one of those when I moved a couple years ago.
Oh, my God. Remember those environmentally friendly like wood pens they were trying to give out?
Do you remember the post-it note tape measure level combo?
They gave those out.
It was like this little thing. Yeah, it had their logo on it. Just got one from my real estate agent.
Ah.
With their logo on it. Same thing.
God.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. You know, I appreciated it from her, actually, because we used it when we were taking measurements in our new house that we're getting. But when that company we worked for handed out, I'm like, what a gross misuse of funds. Like, this thing is ridiculous, you know? I mean, I guess it's kind of cool, but I don't know.
Wait, is big a misuse of funds as really expired chapstick?
No, that's, you know, that's another level. Yeah.
Interesting. So who's Martin Archaeology?
Martin Archaeology, Luke Coretta is one of the employees at Martin Archaeology. I don't know her first name, but Ms. Morton is the head of Morton Archaeology. They're out of New York.
Oh, really?
Upstate New York. Yeah. He can see this picture he's got on the screen here. It's from Utica, the one that you had on the screen before.
Oh,
and,
that one.
Well, you're behind on my screen. So, either way.
Yeah.
They're a small CRM firm and they do a lot of work up in upstate New York in the surrounding area. Yeah. So, and he's using WildNote to do all of it. Yeah, shovel testing and photo management and stuff like that.
It's too bad you can't push the fact that this is really handy for a one man or like a super small operations.
Oh, hey, about it. I called somebody who signed up for WildNote just the other day. Turns out they run a small firm, big podcast fan, so they know all about what we're doing here.
Oh, keep talking.
Yeah. I hired them and you're seeing Richie's chest right now. That's great. Yeah. So I talked to them and he'd already heard about WildNote. Now he's up in Canada and they're pretty much in the dead of winter. So I don't think he's going to be getting a license anytime soon. But when the field season comes around, I talked to him about the whole thing and he's running it's just him usually. Or if he needs a couple of people, he hires a couple of people. Yeah. But they do small stuff, small surveys, small excavations. And he was sold. You know, it's totally designed for somebody like that to save a ton of money.
Yeah.
And a ton of time. So, the whole last 20 minutes has turned into an ad for WildNote, but that's okay.
Well, it's just, I remember when you were working for that, company, like, you know, they kept all the field techs in place of the winter by, transcribing, records.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which isn't the most efficient use of,
which also I've never understood how that's possible from a report standpoint, because you got to turn your report in within a certain period of time.
I know.
If you got a private client, you might be able to. You know, in fact, that's probably how they did it. If you have a private client and not a BLM client or an agency client, then you probably can be like, here's your management summary. You know, we know what we did. We know what we found out there. And we're now going to take our time and keep billing you, but we're going to take our time to finish up the report and the site records. In that case, you could probably stack up your paperwork for the winter.
Yeah, but then it's like a Ponzi scheme where it's like, well, how much money is left in this budget? How much money is left in that budget?
I know. That's why you should go digital the whole time. So, all right. So let's take one more break. because we're going to make this a working break.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about APN membership.
Oh, how's that going?
Yeah. So it's up and down. I had a couple cancellations in the last few weeks because people are like, listen, Christmas is coming up. Field season's over. I got to save my money. Yeah. People are saving any penny they can. And I 100% understand that.
Yeah.
What I'd like to see, I mean, honestly, I don't want to say this out loud because it could damage me getting new subscriptions and helping pay for stuff at the APN. However, I'd really like to see that the general public that listens to the APN are the ones that are really subscribing.
Yeah.
So the people who really are struggling and creating all this information and shovel bumming and doing stuff, so they don't have, they have the benefit of everything the APN has to offer without having to pay the subscription price, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather we were supported by those people that can't afford it and can keep it going. That being said, if you think you want to support us, you can do it for as little as $5 a month.
See?
And I think it works out to like $42 a year or something like that if you get the 30% annual.
Yeah.
So it's 30% off if you pay for an entire year. And and you can gift a membership too. Just put somebody else's name and email address in there. And I'll send them a nice card with a little thing on it and a couple stickers.
Yeah.
And you support us a little longer. So,
yay.
Yeah. So that's my pitch for APN, arcpodnet.com/members, arcpodnet.com/members. We have the supporting level, the standard level and the professional level. The professional level is getting more and more stuff attached to it, including Team Black webinars. And I'm hoping in the first quarter of 2019, Team Black finally has the subscription level as well. But if you're a subscriber to the APN, you're an automatic pro level at Team Black. Yeah. And if you're a pro level at Team Black, which is the only level we're going to have over there, you're an automatic pro level at the APN as well. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Well, I mean, build it up slowly. It's kind of like, what was it? Kind of like that thing I kept hearing about in a Jordan Harbinger show, you know, was Advanced Human Dynamics, you know, and it was forever before, you know, he kept talking about it, but it was forever before he had anything up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was actually surprisingly handy.
Want to switch us back to the camera?
Oh, maybe.
People are done reading about Luke.
Are they?
I think so. So I know one of the things I want to get to before in this last segment, before we're done, is, I had the first episode of my radio show yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to put down here in the comments, and I think if you're watching this on Facebook, you can still see this.
What's the name of the...
KNVC.org. So check that out because they have a Listen Live link, and I think it's listen-live is just the website after KNVC.org. But anyway, it was great. I prepared a bunch of material. I didn't have a guest. I planned on this first one to just basically talk about myself a lot for the first part to sort of establish who I am and why I should be doing this show.
Yeah.
And some of the things that I've done and the podcasts and just all kinds of different stuff. And then I did actually have a few calls. They were all people I know, and I appreciate that they called.
It was really
great because they didn't just call and say, hey, you're doing a good job, but they called with really good questions. Yeah, it was amazing. And it's exactly what I want. So, and I think they were all listening on the web because none of them were in Carson City, Nevada. If you're in Carson City, Nevada, you can listen on 95.1 FM. But if you're not, you got to go to the website. Their antenna doesn't even reach up to Reno. There's another station that's 95.1 in Reno and it overpowers them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, anyway, it was a really good, fun time. I was planning on releasing that in the time slot that this is releasing on the Archaeology Show.
Yeah.
As episode 94 or something like that. But they'd had a power failure that morning because they had some pretty bad weather down there the other day.
Yeah.
And they had a power failure that morning. Nobody was there because they were playing recorded content. And the radio station was off the air for about an hour and a half. So about a half an hour before I got there, somebody else got there and had just started spinning everything back up and then adding files to the program. So they weren't off the air anymore. And, a program they call the skimmer is the thing that, like, imagine a digital security system at a store or something like that.
Yeah.
They usually record back like 30 days and then it starts overwriting 30 days. Huh. Well, the skimmer records everything hour by hour and then, it will start overwriting itself after a certain period of time. It's like a couple of weeks or something like that. So you can go back and take the recording of your show, calls and everything, the on-air signal and have it. Well, they hadn't started the skimmer yet. They forgot. So my very first show, The guy, Brian, who runs the station, he called it my baby picture, which is your very first show on the air. Calls him your baby picture. Was not recorded by anyone. So it's gone. It's gone forever, which is okay, because I'm going to probably do another kind of first show in January when I go live again.
Did you do the pitch a program?
I did. Yeah, and if you click on pitch a program for them, that's how I got in touch with Brian, the station manager, and we started talking, and he liked the idea, and I went down a couple sessions over the last couple months and learned how to work the equipment, and then started the show. So every Friday from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., Pacific time.
Yeah.
You can tune in to knvc.org/, I think it's listen-live, but you can find it right on the website there and go from there.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah.
And you can call in. There's a phone number too. And I don't remember what the phone number is, but we say it live on the air.
Oh, so, you do?
Yeah. I'm not going to say it now cause nobody's going to write it down, but, and I don't remember it, but if you call in, I think it's 775-515-4141, but anyway, we'll say that on the air and you can call in and ask a question. And we're also trying to keep an eye on social media. Really, I need someone to come down there or monitor remotely my social media in case anybody sends a message, because it's really hard for me to pay attention to that while I'm doing the show. Really hard, because with a podcast, I can just pause and look at something, but you can't do that on radio.
Why not?
Because you don't want dead air. You know, I made a couple mistakes, not mistakes, but times where I had to be like, I got distracted by something that was happening in the room and I'm like, my train of thought's been totally destroyed. But I also have no problem just saying that on the air and calling it out. I'm not like nervous or anything when it comes to that stuff. Huh. I'm just like, oh, well, I'm new. So if I make any mistakes, sorry, I'll fix it. You know, whatever. I'll try not to go off the air. I'll try not to do anything stupid, but I might do that. You know, I said that right off the bat. And there was a couple times I had a bunch of notes. I wasn't reading a script. I just had bullet points. I had a whole list of things I wanted to talk about in the order I wanted to talk about them in. And sometimes I lose my place or I'd get off on a tangent or something like that.
So, but so what are the calls about?
So I had three calls. One of them was, he was talking about history in Nevada and how long people had been here. Curious about how long people have been in Nevada. And I basically answered, well, the evidence points to, you know, 14 to 15,000 years ago. But when you look at something like that and you find a group of people and evidence that they were living here for, you know, a long time, you know, a well-established sort of living environment that's 14,000 years old, you have to imagine they didn't just fly here from Siberia, right?
Why not?
Because they couldn't. It probably took them 1,000 years to get down from Siberia. And you can't assume that you're finding them on day one in the Great Basin.
More importantly, didn't they have to hurry since the Earth is only like 6,000 years old?
I know. So they must have just been hanging out for a while waiting for the Earth to be born before they got here. But so no, that's the whole point I was trying to make is, you know, when you find something in archaeology, and this is the point I used to make on that question was, anytime I find something.
Yeah.
I assume that I'm finding an average representation of life related to that thing. Yeah. Because the idea of us finding something unique, us finding an outlier, of us finding something that was just this one-off that nobody's ever seen before, is so unlikely. It's just unlikely because, you know, there's only a handful of those and we're looking for literally a needle in a haystack. Yeah. Sometimes not literally, but... and so when I find something, I assume it's the average. So when we find a cave with remnants of human activity that's 14,000 years old, I have to assume that that's the norm for the 14,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And I have to assume that they have been established. They've been there for a little while. You know, maybe they're in the area and they moved down from somewhere else, but they must have been on this continent for a really long time before that was established. So when I say 14 to 15,000 years ago, people have been in Nevada, I put an asterisk on that and I say, that's the evidence we have. It could be 17, 18, 19, 20,000 years. We have no idea. Because we haven't found sites that old.
Well, it also depends on the part of the country you're in.
Sure.
Because, you know, when I was studying California archaeology as an undergrad, one of the things I did not realize is the fact that San Francisco Bay wasn't a bay until about 4,000 years ago.
Right.
And so most of the oldest sites are basically underwater right now.
Yeah. It was all filling in as the...
You know, as the ocean levels rose.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we started coming out of the Ice Age and...
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a ton of sites under San Francisco Bay. Ton of them. There were whole plains out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just people were living.
Yeah, and now basically they're like eroded and gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, obviously.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff near what we would call the current shorelines have probably been dredged out before we even knew we shouldn't be doing that and we should be checking first. But they were probably been dredged out to make room for other shipping lanes and
that too.
Harbors and docks and stuff like that. So,
well, you got to fit in the super, I wanted to say super tankers, but they're like, you know, the super large container ships.
Yeah, huge container ships that go all the way to Stockton, Stockton, California through the system.
Well, sometimes it depends. The ones now that they have, I forgot, they were introducing them when my dad was still alive. So it was about 10 years ago. The ones that can't go through the Panama Canal, they're so big.
Man.
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I had another question.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned that I had written a book and I talked about the field archaeologist survival guide a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was basically, you know, for somebody who hasn't read the book, she called in and she was just curious about it. What are like the three main things you need to know that's like a takeaway from the book about becoming an archaeologist? Like, if you want to be an archaeologist, what are the three things that are takeaways from the books?
Yeah.
You know, and I basically said, I'm trying to remember exactly what I said, but I said something to the effect of, archaeology is not a 9-to-5 job. Yeah. It's going to be any schedule, any time of the year. And
any
you have
place.
To be okay with that. Any place you have to be okay with that. That was the second one is travel.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to travel. And then I think the third one was something about family and, you know, really, really living where you're at and understanding that if you do have a family and you're always pining for them and wanting to go home, then this probably is going to be a really tough job for you.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting you mentioned that because the person I'm replacing, that's what happened to her. She basically had a freak out or something about, you know, being away.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's understandable. It's human nature.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like Lori on here, if she's still listening, you know, talking about being away from her family for 8 months, I'm sure she got a chance to get back occasionally, but whether she did or not, that's a long time to be away, you know, and I applaud people for being able to do that, but because I don't think I could, you know, I think it'd be really tough. And in fact, my wife and I, when we came to Reno and, you know, she transitioned out of archaeology into another job just at about the time I was kind of staying in town more and doing different things where I was closer. And if I had stayed a straight shovel bum, there's probably not any way our relationship could have survived if I was out of town, you know, all the time during the field season.
Why?
And even then, well, it's just when you're with somebody, you want to be with somebody, you know? And even then, when I had those couple big projects, like the El Centro one you were on with me and then the China Lake one, I mean, that was from like April to February the next year where I was only home every 10 day, you know? And it wasn't even every 10 day. When we were in El Centro, I didn't go home.
No.
You know, we met in San Diego one time. She flew to San Diego and I drove over and we had a weekend there.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it was, you know, it can be tough. Mm. You know, it's just tough. So, and then the final call I got in the radio show was from my dad. And my dad lives on the Oregon coast. And he said that he's always out walking on the ocean because he lives like 2 miles from the ocean.
Yeah.
Or 2 minutes from the ocean. And he's always going out there and walking. And he said, what do I do if I see something that looks like an artifact or just something else, you know, what do I do if I find something?
Take it home.
And well, I told him, I said, and I had mentioned this earlier in the show, I was basically talking about like the Great Basin. Like you really should take a picture of something. And if you don't know how to do coordinates on your phone, at least pull up a map and take a screenshot and then send that information to whatever agency's land you're walking on, whether it's BLM. And if you don't know that, look up the state historic preservation officer for the state that you live in and contact them and just say, listen, I found some stuff. Who do I talk to?
Yeah.
And I told him basically the same thing, but I said, it's a little different when you're talking about the ocean. I said, if you find something that we would call a feature that is basically like something that is, maybe you had a big storm event and removed a bunch of sand from the beach and maybe there was an old wreck there or a foundation or something like that, that could be a historic thing that people haven't seen in a long time. And you might want to contact somebody about that. But an artifact washes up on the beach, it's already out of context. You know, it's already out of the original place that it was in.
That's true.
And I would say take a picture before you pick it up. If you think it's something before you pick it up, just so we can have that. Maybe there was something else around it that is important. And if it does turn out to be something and you tell somebody about it, they can at least look at the picture and say, was it found with anything else that you didn't recognize as an artifact?
Yeah.
Or as being associated with it. But otherwise, you know, it's yours now. You know, pick it up, take it. I don't even know if that's legal. It depends on whose land the beach is on. You know, if you're on a state park over in Oregon and it's a state park beach.
Yeah.
You know, who owns what the ocean delivers up onto the shores of that park? You know, who owns it? So,
it depends.
It probably does depend. And I don't have a strong enough knowledge of the local laws and stuff like that to tell you.
True.
Yeah.
My God, not to go off on a slight tangent, but it does make me think, I forgot, I think there was a case that went all the way Supreme Court, because this, you know, technically all beach land in California is owned by the public, and you can access it.
Yeah.
And there was that, you know, there was that a-hole who was, like, trying to cut off access to the beach and basically make it his own private beach.
Sure.
You know, and he lost.
Yeah.
Ha.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's like, well, people can just get through it by boat, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it's like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ugh. Anyway.
I know. It's crazy. And the really big thing about finding stuff and dealing with it is there's no clear places to go to say that, like, I found something, what do I do with it? Which is probably why people just default to, well, I don't want to leave it here. So I'm going to put it in my pocket and take it home. Well, because they think it's something precious and something valuable and they want to take it with them. And if they leave it out there, somebody else is going to have it. You know, that's just the common attitude.
And that's a zero sum.
I know. And you're right. And the other thing I said during my show yesterday was basically, you know, one of the reasons why we shouldn't do that is because two reasons. One.
Yeah.
Really three reasons.
Yeah.
One, and probably the most important, is it's not yours. It might not be somebody else's that's standing there, but if it's prehistoric, Native American, something like that, it's somebody else's ancestry, somebody else's history. It's important to them that the object not be disturbed, right? They place importance on it. And that might not mean anything to you or me, but, you know, it means something to them. So we should respect that. The second thing is, if you do pick something up and an archaeologist then comes through on an official survey and finds some other stuff there, but doesn't find the fun, pretty things that you picked up, it changes our evaluation of the site.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, it changes what can be done to it.
Suddenly, it's, like, no longer eligible for any sort of protections.
Suddenly, there's bulldozers coming straight over the top of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's blown up for an open pit mine.
Oh.
Probably going to be anyway, but, you know.
Oh, that makes me wonder. Did you use the example of that wallet you found as an example?
Oh, I didn't, actually. I didn't. I'll talk about that in a second.
Oh, good.
And then the third reason why you shouldn't pick something up is I emphasize the fact that I try not to put an emphasis on things anymore when I'm talking to people. Somebody tells me, what's the coolest thing I found? And we've mentioned this on this show before. But they say to me, what's the coolest thing you found? I try not to emphasize the coolest thing I found. I have certain things that I would probably say are really neat things that I found, but it's neat in the context of the place I was in, the time period it was found in, and stuff like that. What's the bigger story that the thing can tell, you know? And even if we're not thinking about that as archaeologists, like if you find a Clovis point, which if you're listening to this and you don't know what a Clovis point is, it's almost like the holy grail for archaeologists, even though it's not really the oldest thing anymore.
Yeah. Or even something from that era, because I found something from that era.
Yeah, you find a stem point or something from that era that is really cool. The object itself, sure, we might say out loud, wow, this is a really cool thing.
Oh.
But I think internally, we're really saying, I found something from 14,000 years ago. You know, I found something from 12,000 years ago. And even if we're not saying it out loud, we're thinking, man, what was it like? You know, who left this here? What were they doing? What were they after? You know, what were the circumstances? That's what I'm thinking. And I want to try to articulate those stories rather than just say, you know, I found this really cool thing and not really explain the reason behind it.
Well, it's like, what's cooler, visiting Machu Picchu or finding like some little piece of stone that they that they shaped?
Right, right. Exactly, exactly.
Or is it more interesting to look at a fragment of, you know, a mummy wrapping, or to actually go to Egypt?
Right.
You know.
So the last thing I'll comment on is really has nothing to do with archaeology, which fits the thesis of this show. When Richie and I were walking back from a meetup
on Wednesday,
in the like pitch black on a sidewalk, I was actually kind of leaning forward or down a little bit because there's these bushes that nobody ever trims on that section of sidewalk. And I happened to catch sort of just gleaming a little bit because it had shiny zippers, a little black pouch. And actually the first thing I thought was my wife had she used to have a set of headphones that came in a little case like that.
Oh.
And that's what I thought it was. She also had a little external hard drive that came in a little case like that, like a little tiny passport, the Western Digital passport.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what I thought. And then I unzipped it and looked at it, and there was like a fat stack of money in there.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And I was like, holy crap, this is somebody's wallet. And it was too cold to really go through it and look into it. I had my gloves on, so I just put it in my pocket, and I was like, I'll take a look at this when I get home. I got home. There was a driver's license. There was a credit card. There was a library card, $160, a bank slip, where the balance was less than that, and a condom. So I was like, well, somebody's going out for a good time. Actually, they're not anymore because they dropped their wallet on the way to that good time. So I did some quick searching. There was no phone number. I went through the wallet looking for a phone number. Obviously, nobody leaves their own phone number in a wallet, but I thought maybe there's a business card or something.
Yeah.
But there wasn't. And so I looked up, I tried using the person's name and address to find them online.
Yeah.
And their picture on the business card. I looked up, or on the driver's license, I looked them up on Facebook and on Twitter, and I found somebody on Facebook who looked the same. Oddly enough, there were like 8 people in Reno with the same name.
Really?
So I had to figure out, well, which one of these, you know, people could it be? And so anyway, I was looking through there, and I sent this, it was a woman, I can say that. I sent her a message on Facebook when I dialed down which one I thought it was.
Yeah.
And the next morning, I swung by her apartment, which is on between here and there, between here and where I live. You know, she's just like closer to downtown.
Oh, so it's not the place where it's not the same place you picked it up at.
It's not even close.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She must have just been out for a walk or something.
Oh.
So anyway, I swung by her apartment and I left a note on the door because I didn't want to leave the wallet there in case she doesn't live there anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So, because there was money in it and it looked like it was a substantial amount of money for this person, because if their bank balance was any indication, they didn't have a lot left. So they pulled it out for bills or something, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even know what. So I knocked on the apartment door. Nobody answered. I left a note. And then my wife picked me up at the end of the day, Friday, and we were headed somewhere, or Thursday.
Yeah.
And we swung back by there because I left my phone number and I left the address of my office. I said, I'll be here all day. Here's my phone number. Give me a call. I'll get you your wallet, you know, because I had it with me.
Yeah.
And we swung by there at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The note was gone.
Oh, it was?
Nobody was still in the apartment. The windows were, there was no curtains, so they were open.
Oh.
And I knocked on the door. Nobody was there. And I was like, all right, fuck it. I was like, I don't know what to do. So when I went to my Civil Air Patrol meeting Thursday night, I swung by the downtown police station on 2nd and dropped it off there.
Oh, good. That's what you're supposed to do.
I know, but I thought I was going to do that anyway, but if I could get a hold of her before she canceled her credit cards and stuff, then that would be great. But now who knows how long it's going to take the police to contact her. She's probably going to cancel everything, get a new driver's license.
Not that long.
Yeah, well, hopefully not.
No,
I mean, bad for her, though, because it's a lot of money.
No, I mean, seriously, because it's a long story, but I was biking around during, not this year, but the Art Town last year. And my wallet fell out. And, you know, I went back and looked for it, but someone had already picked it up. Like, literally, I had biked off and, like, you know, I realized my wallet's not there. I circle back around and it's, like, already gone. I'm like, Jesus, that's fast. And, you know, but then the cops call me and they're like, yeah, you know, and they give it back to me. They were, like, a couple of blocks away, so I just turned it in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, like, you know, because obviously cops can, like, look you up by your driver's license and figure out all that stuff really
easily.
I'm
curious as to whether she even lives there anymore, because why would she grab the note that I left in the door and then not call? It was her wallet. I would have called immediately.
No, it's probably building management.
Yeah, who knows?
Or something.
Who knows? So anyway.
So dinner wasn't on her.
Dinner wasn't on her, but it could be. If they never find her for some reason, hopefully she's okay and not like, you know, missing or something, because I'll be the prime suspect probably turning in her wallet. But they told me, I asked a friend of mine who used to be a Reno police detective when I got to CAP.
Oh.
And I said, well, so what's the procedure? What are they going to do? And he's like, well, they'll try to contact her and, you know, they'll put it in evidence and they'll inventory it and they'll try to get a hold of her. And I said, what if they can't get a hold of her? And he said, well, typically, the time frame varies because they forget about stuff. But typically, if they haven't picked it up in 6 months, they contact me again and they give it back to me.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I was like, well, worst case scenario, I can come out of it with $160 6 months from now.
Yeah.
And a condom. I'll go out and have a great time. Yeah, apparently. So... All right, well, I've got another busy night ahead, as I usually do.
Oh, same here.
Yeah, a lot of podcast editing. Richie's getting ready for some solid, cold winter field work.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in not, like, a crazy cold portion of California, but
well,
the last time I was in that area...
Well, it depends on the elevation.
The last time I was in that area for a conference that we both went to, there was a lot of snow on the ground up in the hills. So, yeah.
Which is why it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously, like, this week, they sent the crew home, like, a day or two early.
Yeah.
You know, so, supposedly, I'll be down there, but, you know.
Yeah.
I might have enough off time and just come back.
Yeah.
Because I really want to hang out in, like, an Airbnb by myself for, like, 4 days.
I hear you. So.
Cool.
All right, man.
Hang on.
Well, sounds good.
All right, there.
Richie's putting up our transition screen, so thanks a lot. Again, I'll mention WildNote.com, WildNoteApp.com. And knvc.org if you want to hear me on the radio, and really I don't want you to hear me on the radio. I want you to call in and ask me a question. you know, call in or text in or message in or something. KNVC's got a Twitter feed. They're putting information out there. You can tweet me at Archeo Webby, A-R-C-H-E-O Webby, W-E-B-B-Y, or ArcPodNet, and go from there. And then APN, ArcPodNet.com/members to help support us. And then, of course, you can see more information.
Oh, and a happy archaeology fun time. And hopefully very soon. I forget if it's happyarchaeologyfuntime.com or what, but it's going to... I'll figure that out.
We'll definitely put that out, and we'll have to update this slide to let people know as well.
Oh, my God. By the way, did you know that... Was it Spotify or Pandora this week that just it's going to be releasing podcasts on their feed?
Pandora.
Oh, good.
Spotify's been doing it.
Oh, they have?
Yeah. A couple of my clients are both on Spotify.
Oh. Yeah. Wait, is that through Libsyn?
Yeah, through Libsyn.
Interesting.
Which is one of only a few ways you can get on Spotify podcasts. I've tried getting the APN on there. I've heard it's opened up a little more, and I should probably try again.
Yeah.
But they weren't really letting other people in if you weren't on Libsyn or Blueberry.
Oh, why not?
So, well, it's just because they had agreements with them, and it was hard to do it otherwise. So. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody, for joining us. You know, I think we've lost most of our listeners at this point.
We have?
When I looked 5 minutes ago, we still had four, and now it says one. So, anyway, if you're listening on the podcast, thank you very much for listening.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be looking at lining up some guests for the radio show.
Neat.
So if you want to interact with the public and call in on a regular phone line, it's super easy. You don't have to record anything. We can get you on the radio show and then have people ask questions at noon on a Friday.
My God. You know, oh my God, there's, we can talk about this out the air, but one idea I just had right now.
Yeah.
Metal detectorist. Archaeologist versus metal detectorist.
I know. And that's a big subject. Chuck says late. I'm not sure what's late. Probably we're late. I don't know.
Always.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And we'll see you again.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning. Keep discovering new things and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in Reno, Nevada at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.